I see people living as an energetic spectrum. Each one of us, to me, is a vibration of sort. And to live an authentic life is to live our life in that full vibration. You see a person, you feel a person, and you know they're not holding back.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
18 Summers Tribe, Jamie here. Today, we're speaking with a dear friend, Alon Osery. He's known Jim, I guess, about 10 years, but I didn't know that until today. So that's a fun discovery. I met Alon at a writing workshop in which we went deep fast. And I think ever since then, he's held a really soft spot in my heart. He's an entrepreneur that loves to create things. He's a co-founder of Osery Bakery. He sells natural baked goods across North America. They're super yummy seed-wise. You'll hear us talk about it on the podcast as well. He also is co-founder of Parallel Brothers, a brand that sells sesame butter in Toronto. He has a podcast that he co-hosts discussing the events, the affairs, the things that are happening in Toronto. He recently published a book that shares the story of how he broke away from the trajectory of his life that others had placed on him. And he came out to his wife and his children and just started a life of authenticity. And it's completely changed that trajectory of his life. We get vulnerable in this episode and raw, and I hope you enjoy our time together as much as we did.
Hi, good morning, friends.
Good morning. It's so good to see you.
I think it's important to say, so Alon, me, you, Alon, some other close friends, we knew each other and spent time together. I think you and I met Alon probably 7-8 years ago, one of the earlier mastermind talks. But then,
how did I not know that?
I think you got sat next to each other. I mean, we had a really nice. One of the California ones. Remember, Alon, and we sat next to each other. And I think like Shep Gordon was at our table. Like it was a crazy table. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. Yeah, I was so excited to sit with Shep.
And you're like, who's this guy? And it was me. So
I usually say, who's this guy as to the most important person in the room who's sitting next to me. But when Tim Ferriss talked to us one time, I'm like, who's that guy? I don't know him. And he was like a god walking amongst the people.
Amongst the entrepreneurs. Well, that's because you are a down-to-earth fella, which is why we've gotten along. And again, we met really deeply. I'm going to say we really became friends when we spent that weekend in Austin together at the writing workshop. And that's not a normal situation. I mean, we all had some serious breakthroughs in our life. Things that you wrote about, things Jamie did, things that I've begun to speak about, which was excellent. And it's great to have entrepreneur friends that know you on a deeper level. And we definitely consider you to be one of them.
Thank you. I'm honored. And the energy that the two of you exude, and every time we meet, I feel good about myself. So I think that's what's special about special people is they make you feel heard and seen. And I think you guys do that. And at least to me. So we don't meet much, but when we do, that's what I carry with me after.
We just jump right in.
I really appreciate it. But that was a special weekend. I remember it was a game changer for me in my life also.
Yeah.
Because you were just at the beginning of a big change in your life.
One of a few changes. Definitely, that was a big one where I kind of was asked by Philip McKernan to join this writing exercise or memoir exercise. And I said, listen, I can't write. I'm going to attend because you asked me and because it's in Austin, which I like. But it was a big challenge for me. When I came there, I wasn't intending on writing anything.
Wow. But you have such an incredible story of living authentically.
Yeah, thank you. It's been years in the making. So I think that weekend of writing the book, things started just on the Monday when we were done. It started the flow. And I started writing every day and the stories just poured. Even then, it was not with an intent to write a book or to put together a book, but it was just to tell a bunch of stories. And the decision to make the book happened only in April or in May of that year, where kind of I got a message through a friend where my voice needs to be heard. And I'm like, okay, universe, I'm listening. And I knew it was right. I knew that message was right, even though, again, the writing wasn't there for that. And then I printed all these stories and laid them on the carpet in my living room. And I'm like, wow, there could be a book here. So that's kind of how it happened.
So do you mind telling us about the book and the story? I mean, we know it, but I'd love to share it with the community.
Definitely. So I have a family. I have three kids and an ex-wife. And I came out to my ex-wife and kids about 10 years ago. And I was around 40, 41. And it was a very difficult process. And it was a very freeing process. The years preceding to that were very difficult. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wrote about. I wrote about how I grew up and what I was aware of or not. Being gay wasn't around me, wasn't on my radar in any way. Nobody was gay when I grew up. And I never had any experiences like that. But it definitely was inside me. I was aware of it, but kind of pushed it down and deep. And as life goes, you know, it's just went through the different stages of life up until, I guess, my mid-30s, where, you know, you have kids, you develop a business, and then suddenly that started raising its head and it was really hard to ignore and it started affecting my relationship. And then from there on, I kind of went to therapy and the therapist kind of asked me, "Are you gay?" And I said, "I don't know." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I've never been with a man." So he stopped there, paused for a second, thought, and I'm like listening and sweating and nervous. That was maybe by the fifth meeting. And he said, "Maybe you owe your wife to find out." And that was kind of the biggest message for me, for because until then, I couldn't do it for myself, but I owed my wife, who I really cared for and loved, to find out. And that started, rolled the ball even further and made things happen.
Wow. Now, what did it feel like all those years living inauthentically? Like, what were some of the feelings that came up? I know you said you always knew. You kind of always, it wasn't around you, but there was something different stirring inside of you. And then as time progressed and you checked the boxes and you did the thing, I mean, obviously you very much loved your wife, but then the piece just kept showing back up. What did that feel like?
It's interesting because I kind of distracted myself with life. So when I, in my early teens or mid-teens, our family lost everything financially. And I took that when I was 16, we moved back from Israel to Canada and we had nothing. We had the bags on our back and we came to Canada. I was born here, but I wasn't here since age three. And I had to start working to be able to buy clothes and then also to contribute to the family. And so did my brothers. It's funny because we never felt poor because we were a tight family unit, but we you know, had to go out and work and make things happen. And that kind of distracted me. And there was a goal for myself to succeed. And I had a tremendous drive to do that. So during university here, I wrote a business plan and that took all my energy. And I love food and I love food development and I was good at that. And we opened a business together, my ex and I and my father, and then my brother joined. And we were fortunate enough to be fairly successful. So that took a lot of my energy and time. And then it was
the in-person bakery. Was that?
It started as a sandwich shop, a small sandwich shop, 700 square foot sandwich shop downtown Toronto. And then it grew to a commercial bakery and then it grew even more. And now it's fairly, I'd call it a medium-sized bakery with 200 people selling product across North America. We now have other businesses too, but that took all my energy and effort. And as that happened, then the kids happened. So I'd say I was married when I was 24, so fairly young. And I haven't had a lot of experience with women either before that. And we lived 6 years together. And then when I turned 30, we said, let's have kids. And that happened fairly quickly. And that took all our energy too. So I think once the business began stabilizing and the kids grew up a little, our relationship began to be affected. So again, it's so hard to describe like logic and feeling and how humans work. It's so much easier to look at other people and judge. While it happens to you, it's a different story. You're putting so much energy into ignoring something, which may be obvious to others. I think in my case, it wasn't obvious to others, but who knows? I see people living as an energetic spectrum. Each one of us, to me, is a vibration of sort. And to live an authentic life is to live our life in that full vibration. You know, you see a person, you feel a person, and you know they're not holding back. Even by being quiet, you know they're not holding back. You almost feel that. Mm-hmm. And I think that I was at maybe 50% of what I could have been. Mm-hmm. So in the business, it was successful and all, but as a human being, I wasn't. And I think that affected me with having true friends. I think that affected me with feeling comfortable with my environment. I think it affected me also even with money. We were successful, but it was always a struggle. And as I came out, and it's a coming out process, I mean, I think this, by the way, can happen also to heterosexual people, is living in their own skin. Sure. For me, it was a matter of sexuality. And so it's, you know, it is what it is. But as I came to terms with myself, first is accepting self and then letting the world know. And by the way, coming out never ends. You always meet new people. And I always, should I tell them? When should I tell them? Oh. Is it going to be just, are we going to know each other for 5 minutes so I don't have to? Or is there a potential for something else? And, you know, I need to find a time to insert it just so there's clarity and no surprises. Mm-hmm. So it never ends, really. Now it's easy, but it definitely goes through your mind. So, yeah, and I'd say I had friends, but I wasn't comfortable. It wasn't fully me. And since I came out, I dropped a few friends who, quote unquote, not bad people, just it wasn't the fit. And now I have a community of friends and people. A year after I came out, for some reason, I can't explain it, it was the first time we took such a big bonus from the company. Suddenly, you know, for we've been working for 15 years and lo and behold, a year after, suddenly we were able to bonus ourselves. I kind of think there is a connection there of, as I'm coming into my skin, things are, you know, there's flow. I'm not blocking myself. So I think you're living half a life if you're not authentic to yourself or with yourself.
And how incredible, because really you couldn't reach your full potential if you're at half. So just think of, like you said, the bonus came and like all the things started falling into line when you honored what your path was and you could get into that flow, which is really incredible. And we've seen, I believe you say, everyone has a coming out story, right? We all are coming out. Like I feel like that birthday party you were at this year was a bit of a coming out for me. Like that was very difficult. And I've had a couple of moments in the last year that were really like that. It was like, I once had an intuitive tell me your like station is just slightly off. Like you just need to turn the station to where the fuzz isn't there anymore. And it kind of brings in all sorts of things into your life that really forward such a trajectory. And two, for us, I know during the pandemic, you know, shit's crazy. And we were like, sure, we should start fostering some children. And so we don't know if we're going to be homeless in 6 months. What's the economy going to do? Are we all dying from some smog? Let's throw two more in the mix. And we've never made so much money in our life. And it was like, it honestly was like the trajectory, like you're saying, it was like all of a sudden, like the universe was like, but you really need to do this thing for me. And you really need to honor the space in yourself. So I so much hear what you're saying in our story. And I think it's important because your children need to see that. So while you're experiencing all of this, you have 3 children and 2 in a moment. I'd love to hear, not that you can speak for her, but I'm wondering if your ex had her own coming out, you know, getting into her own skin. But how did your children, maybe now 10 years down the road, how are they seeing and processing knowing that you're now your best self, even though it was difficult to get there?
You know, when I came out to them, I didn't want to tell them why. I was still processing and still learning to be myself. And I'm telling my ex-wife, let's just tell them that we're separating and we'll tell them later why. They don't need to know. And she insisted that we will. I think it was also important for her to broadcast this in some way. And I fully understand it. And it turned out to be the right thing, the right call. Even though I was terrified of that, because I was terrified of not living under the same roof with my kids. That was a terrible fear for me. And, you know, the first thing I did, close to the first thing, was move out, and it was to move out not far away from them. And now I think I had a conversation. So my 2 sons, they're now 22 and 20, and our daughter is 17. And I do ask them sometimes, they're adults, and we always spoken directly. And I asked them if they've been affected by it. I tell them, I know you've been affected by it, and I apologize if I've harmed you in any way. And their answer was, you know, Dad, we always knew we were loved. And the moment they said that, my heart melted, because that was our intention. And I always had that love for them. I always had it for them, and I'm always there for them. One of our strengths, I said, we grew up, you know, in a family that had financial volatility. But we always had a strong family unit. And I know we have each other. I think I attribute a lot of our financial success, our business success, to the fact that my brothers and I and our father are very close. And we have also a strong family unit. And I carry it on with our own family. So it's just beautiful seeing them growing up and how non-judgmental they are, I think that me coming out had an impact on them, but I think it was for the positive and it encourages them to be themselves. I think our kids don't have anything to rebel against. Just, you want to do a tattoo, you want to go there, go yeah, there. You want, what? Yeah, like honestly, just be you and I'm here for you. I'm not here to live your life, but I'm definitely here to support you.
Yeah. I think, you know, Alon, we were talking about this the other day, and one of the biggest, someone said, what's the biggest compliment you've had from your children? And we've just quickly said that they still want to hang out with us. And that's a really simple treasure right there. And we're like, because people saw it at MMT and other things, we're like, yeah, of course we have our arguments or disagreements, but we like to hang out with each other. And it sounds like you were able to, through something that, you know, could have been seen as some as like, oh, that's it, this family's splintered forever, to carry through that. And here they are, you know, giving the best compliment ever. We were always loved, and they're obviously still wanting to hang out with you.
That is amazing for you guys. That's a huge compliment. I see my son and my father. My father is 87, and both sons, they communicate. They go to watch soccer at his apartment. So they spend time together independently of us, which shows, I don't know, it shows something. And
that's special.
Yeah.
Legacy and teamwork that he helped create in you and you've now created. That's just so incredible to you guys. It sounds like your family has always been rich in the things in which you can't buy, you know?
Yeah. And I think it doesn't just happen. So when we broke up, when I left, we were telling our kids, and I think that the said, we're breaking up and dad is gay. And we looked at them and we said, do you have any questions? And there were two questions. One
wow, that must have been a pretty big moment for you. Wow.
It was, I'll never forget it. I'm sitting on the sofa, me again, I sweat when I'm nervous. So I'm like sweating and nervous. And there were two questions. I think one was, are we still going to have Friday nights together? Mm. So we're of Jewish origin and every Friday we meet together. And it's usually not just the five of us. It's usually 10, 15 people and either family or friends who have become family. And we looked at each other and we said, yes. So that was the one question. And the second question was, are we going to have holidays together, yearly holidays? And, you know, we haven't thought about that. And it was interesting to hear their perspective. So we look at each other again and we nod and we say yes. And we had a few trips together, now less because they're older and we kind of do things together, but in smaller groups. But definitely for the first, I don't know, 8 years, we had a big Africa trip together.
Oh, that's right.
People didn't know, like, what is this family? They're sleeping in separate rooms, but they act like a family. And yeah, so I think these structures and kind of building them in really help manifest this togetherness. It's like to be rather than stand there and talk about it, just be and have dinners together and be there and drive them to soccer and just put in the time.
It's pretty incredible because you would think two things. I mean, I'm just reflecting here. Going broke and then coming out. I mean, I would think the general thought would be, oh, well, that, you know, if you're going broke or that happens, and you have conquered both in your lifetime.
I'll tell you, I was, age 16, it wasn't my cross to bear, or I can't think of a Jewish term for that, but
we get it.
But you had to play a role. You had to step in. You had to
be a team player. I went through that with my family too. I think it is
it
a partial your cross
to bear. You know what it is? I did carry it. I decided to carry it because it's interesting because my two brothers seems to me they're not carrying it. I carried it more. I'll be honest, like, thankfully, I don't carry it any longer. I think that kind of also pushed me to success, but also held me down a little in other ways. Mm. And now I see the world in a more holistic way rather than out of a place of disparity, kind of where I have to do it or have that fear of losing, which can act in two ways, I think. Jim, how did you experience it in life?
Fifth grade, my parents went broke. It was one of the toughest things that I ever watched. So for me, it stayed with me. I mean, if anything, I would say it's only left me in the last 7-8 years, maybe.
And that's through
lots of
medicinal assistance and, you know, lots of stuff.
Well, and you know what? Something good came of it, of me, Alon. Mm-hmm. I, at a young age, in my early 20s, I was never a good student, but I took full ownership. And my goal, was to be able to provide for my parents what they couldn't have. And I was able to retire my parents by my 20s.
Amazing.
What I did through my real estate investments. So it served a purpose.
And still now.
I would have had that serious edge when I was younger to go after entrepreneurship if it was just for me. That wasn't enough. I was like, if I could prevent that from happening and give my parents what they didn't have when I was young, and I was able to do that. So that was a big reward.
Yeah, I remember when I signed the first loan for our first business. I was just out of university. My father is, let's do this together. I said, sure, I'm owing the state $25,000 for my schooling. And my parents put the only, I think it was $50,000. They had nothing else, nothing. And my father was 60 and my mom was 55. And I remember signing that paper. And I was so, like, that moment I took upon myself my parents' retirement. It's funny that you said that, because I think there are a lot of similarities there.
Yes.
And when he was able to retire, or both of them were able to retire, I felt so good about that.
Yes. It's an accomplishment. It's an honor. Are you the oldest?
I am.
Yeah. So, and I'm the oldest son. So there's some sort of, whether you're going into the Bible or the Torah of the eldest son, that I think sometimes we hold ourselves too strong on. And sometimes that was a bad thing, but other times when you got to complete that honor, that's something no one can ever take away from us. And I think I'll remain proud on that.
Yeah. I don't feel I did it by myself at all. We definitely did it as a team. Like, I needed him, he needed me and my brother. Like, we all, that was a magical combination to give us success, and my ex also.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I don't want to make it sound as me, because for me, my parents, they signed on a lot of real estate debt with me in the very beginning. They didn't have a lot of money, but they had great credit. So I was able to be the action taker and they were able to sign on the debt, and it worked really well together. So,
yeah.
And let me ask you this, Alon, are your sons in the business?
That was my next question.
Yeah. A lot of people ask us this because we're, you know, we are a family business. My belief when it comes to our kids is I want them to maximize their potential. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the one who's going to tell them what their potential is. And they need to find it out themselves. They need to live their life and find it out. We did the business. It was my passion from age 16, or even before that, I was baking. I loved making pitas. A 16-year-old who was making pitas because I watched my grandmother and aunt making it. And I loved that process. So that was my route. And theirs is different. And it's so interesting to see. So the oldest is going into music and he writes and he sings and he's very talented. Mm. And the second son, he didn't know what he was going into. Now he's into psychology, year three, thriving, doing really well, will probably take that on. And I never would have guessed that. So yeah, it's, if they wanted to go into the business, they needed to prove themselves, but they needed to want it. And it seems that they don't. So that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's great when you have a team mentality that they know that they can truly be themselves. And you have ultimately expressed the being true to yourself and being authentic. So they feel safe too, which is incredible.
Yeah. And this, you know, there's still uncertainty, you know, it's not, they're not sure, and that they're so young. And I encourage them to make mistakes, go make mistakes at a certain point. Even if they ever want to do a business, I think I'll happily give them a sum of money to go and make a mistake or succeed or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Just the same as we help with university. So yeah.
That's great. And I think one thing that we teach about authenticity,
big word.
I was like, wow, where's that word? Rolling around in there, is that it's so important that our children see us being real. And so whether, you know, when you're part of a team, there's times when you don't knock it out of the park. Sometimes you fall short. And when you're so close, your children see that. And just as you're saying, I'll hand them, we'll encourage them to go start your business. And if it fails, like, yay, you've learned so much. Like, that's totally fine. I think it's so important in this conversation to just acknowledge like the being real. And I think one thing that I've shared in the past is when the boys and I were on our own and things were hard and I didn't have any emotion, like that part of me was dead and gone and whatever. And so I remember trying to really encourage in the boys one day, somebody got hurt and I'm like, it's fine to cry. Like everybody cries. It's totally fine. And they reflected back to me, but you don't ever cry. And I thought, wow, I've really messed something up here because they don't know how to have emotion because I've not shown them. And so, you know, you being authentic, you creating this team environment, you showing them, hey, I was going left for a lot of years. And then I realized I was supposed to be going right. I mean, those are things that our children need to see us live, no matter if it's through financial difficulties, through sexual orientation, through whatever it may be. I just think that, you know, you had a strong root that your family gave you of pulling together, and we do what we do and we're not lacking. And I think that you continued to pass that on.
Thank you. I think from what you say, hey, you can't escape their eyes and they're so smart and you think you're faking it to them, but you really are not. And I think it's great for them also to know gray is okay. There's a lot of gray and we are not perfect. And again, I try to emphasize this with them. You cannot over-communicate. Let's talk. Like with the boys, to get them talking is a challenge sometimes. So somebody wise, I don't remember who said, you know, with boys, what you do is you need to do something else. And then that will open up the channels of communication. So we go for a walk, right? We'll go for a walk. And at first we'll say nothing. And then words start coming out and then they'll start talking more and more. But if I'm going to sit in front of them and want to talk, chances that will happen are much slimmer. So finding an activity and doing something together, I think works very well to get that communication. That's so important.
That's awesome. That's one of our steps in our board meeting strategies. That's so funny. Like go do something fun together so that everybody chills out and then you can have some space.
The conversation.
Yeah. Like golfing or whatever. Yeah. Anything.
You just did the perfect plug for our book. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Thanks.
Pretty much did a family board.
High five.
Alan is so elegant where he was like, when they see it in their eyes and you feel it. And it's like, I would have been like, oh no, their bullshit detector goes off. And, just, he says it so much.
But
more.
He's not from New Jersey.
I know.
But
that's why people like them and not me.
You know, it's funny, like we have all different personalities. I use profanities here and there and my friends know me for that sometimes, but it's interesting when you talk about certain things, you know, you get into a certain mode and then with your friends it's a certain mode and it's I can't explain it. It's like
we're getting the professional one. Apparently. That's
and
great.
I have a book to sell you.
Okay. So speaking of books, I want you to tell us all the things and places we can find you, from your book to your snacks, which are amazing.
Yeah, so delicious. I have a little bit of an addiction to the chocolate seed clusters.
Well, that's my favorite also. Yeah, thank you.
Once we open a bag of anything, we eat it all in one sitting. And I looked at the back and I was like, oh my gosh, this says 8 servings. I just ate 8 servings of Alan snacks.
That's okay. They're very good. They make you younger. It's like healthier.
Yeah, they are healthy. They're very healthy, which is awesome. Something we're really trying to do more of. So that makes it easier. So when they're delicious and healthy, that's...
I just wrote down send Seedwise to you guys. So
we love it.
No, I want to. So yeah, thank you. First of all, well, the book is on Amazon and it's called Even the Sidewalk Could Tell. And, you know, it is my memoir and I wrote it for... Even for me, it was about sexuality. I wrote it for 30 to 50 year olds who are not living their authentic life. And right. I think there's something, you know, you learn from other people's experiences and then just shifts the light off of you. And it's easier to get messages and understand things. So that's what I was trying to do. As to our products, our newest line of products are Seedwise. They're keto, grain-free, of course, allergen-free, and low sugar, which falls under keto also. And they're available also on Amazon in the US and in a bunch of chains. I can't give you the chains that they're in right now because it's
I just order them on Amazon because I know I can find them in one spot. So
yeah, and they're doing well. They're just 6 months, and we've been in bakery for 25 years, and it's such a hard job to be in gluten and bread, and that's kind of a shrinking category, even though our products are better for you and no preservatives and all that. And this is a new category that has grown a lot in the past years, but it's interesting to see how success takes place there.
That's awesome.
I love it. And we have a finale question that we like to ask all of our people, and this will be fascinating coming from you. So during the pandemic, Alan, we all know the question, Alan, what would you say to your 21-year-old self? And that's great, but it's been done. So what we started to ask ourselves and other people is, what advice would your 75-year-old self give to us today? Or would give to you today? So you got to look forward thinking to what you think that 75-year-old Alan. Now, we saw a picture of him at MMT when they did that age thing, which was awesome.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You got like the trophy of being the only handsome one.
I don't recall paying Jason anything for that statement, but a check is on the way.
Take it and run. So 75-year-old Alan, what advice would he give us today?
I would say that to have faith in the universe. So the universe is rooting for us. And I would say, be yourself. just be yourself. And if you're not comfortable in the place you're at, that you cannot be yourself, move. And I don't see by moving physically, but change the people around you. Surround yourself with people where you feel you are yourself. And I know it's kind of general. I don't have specifics for that, but I think you understand what I'm saying is, I want to breathe fully. I want to laugh fully. I want to hug fully. Mm-hmm. And I can do it only with people that I feel comfortable with and in an environment that I'm comfortable and safe in. And I would really recommend that people put themselves in that situation and surround themselves with the people that are rooting for them.
Love it.
Gosh, I need to write.
The universe is rooting for you. Be yourself. That is a really good one. We got to put that one. Quote.
Breathe fully, quote, hug fully. You know, that's awesome. It reminds me of how, like you said, move. I mean, sometimes it's physically, sometimes it's moving friends, sometimes it's moving.
Yeah.
Because you can't really thrive always in a space in which you've received trauma. And so you have to move into a new space. So that's powerful. Thank you so much for spending time with us today and being vulnerable and authentic.
Yeah.
Thank you. I so enjoyed it. I came in with a nervous energy and I'm walking away with the same energy as I told you that I get from you guys.
Oh, good.
Oh, well,
we love seeing you. We love hanging out and we're looking forward to seeing you sooner than later.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Alon. Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.